Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got the lovely and amazing Kimberly Spencer. She is the host of the Princess and the Bee podcast. What does the B stand for? I'm glad you asked. The B actually has several meanings. The B stands for business, bodies, bank accounts, boys, babies, just about everything that you might deal with in life, you know, depending on your proclivities and who you are as a person. And is that a weird way to start the show? I think it is. And I think we're going to run with it. I am feeling a little weird lately, and I know that the intros have been kind of off the rails, and everyone's sort of noticed that. Again, I mentioned on the last episode, if you didn't hear it, that it's time for me to either up the medication or accept the fact that it got me through what I needed it to, and it's time to go off of it. I still haven't quite figured out what I'm going to do about that, so I made an appointment with my doctor. And we're going to have a conversation, and we're going to see how that goes. I'm completely open to either choice at this point. I just need to think a little harder on why it is I might want to increase the medication, or why I might want to go off of it entirely and go back to the way that I've been doing things for the past 15 years, which is just managing with coping mechanisms, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's a lot to think about. It's not something to think about lightly. I've really been thinking a lot about my state of being lately, especially as the weather change has come in. We've had a couple of days of snow here in Denver, Colorado, and today was one of those days. Lots of snow. It was kind of gray outside, and I was wondering why the snow makes me so sad. It seems strange that it should. I came from Michigan, and you know, the snow here in Colorado is nothing like the snow in Michigan. The cold doesn't go to your bones. Even when it's snowing outside, I can pretty much wear a hoodie here. We are still the West, after all. And I don't know what it is. And then today, I think I figured out part of it, maybe. I have a lot of negative thoughts and feelings toward my hometown. And I felt like I got away from it. And, you know, it may be a Pavlovian response at this point. The fact that when it snows and the sky is kind of gray, I feel like I'm back there. And it reminds me of the person that I thought I was. It reminds me of the kind of walls that I would put up and the behaviors I would engage in to try to make myself feel safe when, in fact, all of it was bad. It just wasn't a good fit. I wasn't a good fit for there. It wasn't a good fit for me. It just wasn't a good situation. And I had to make some changes in my life and with myself, and I had to own every bit of it. Because it was all me. The way I felt about things was the part I could control. And I chose to do things one way, and it didn't always work out the best for me or the people around me. And now I'm here, and I've done all this work, and I've gone through a lot of changes, and there's something about snow and a gray sky that takes me back. So, what I'm going to do from now on is I'm going to see if I can rip that old wiring out and see if I can ring a new bell. Maybe this dog, you know, can learn to salivate at something else. It may not be the best metaphor. So I'm going to stop talking, and we're going to get into today's conversation with Kimberly Spencer. And I cannot wait for you to dig into this meaty, meaty conversation. Yeah, still saying dumb things. I'm going to stop now. I promise. Going. This is it.
Awesome. So easy.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
Exactly. So first things first, how are you doing today?
I am doing extraordinary. And yourself?
I'm doing pretty well, actually.
Amazing.
Not a bad place to be.
A bad place to be. What would make it even better?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe and a little more coffee. Yeah, it's good. The weather is changing. I always like it when it starts getting into that fall sort of stuff. So that's
my favorite season.
Yeah, it's really great. It's nice. You know, it's still hot outside, but it's got that crispness in the air. So yeah, but you know that. I mean, you're living in California.
California, living the dream, baby. Born and raised. I'm one of those weird Los Angelinos who was born in Los Angeles and raised in Los Angeles and still in Los Angeles.
Wait, but then how are you happy?
It's a choice.
Yeah.
It's a choice. It's
well, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, because that's, it, I mean, that's it, the version of yourself that you are right now. That was a journey to get there.
100%. Yeah. I mean, oh my goodness. If I told my kindergarten teacher that I would be on podcasts and speaking professionally and flying around the world, like speaking on stages, she would literally fall over because I was so shy and insecure in kindergarten, that my teacher thought I needed to be put in special classes because anytime she would call on me, I would pee on myself. Like I was that nervous. I was that embarrassed. I was that scared to speak in public. And I really give a lot of credit to my mom, who, when I said I don't have a lot of friends, I stalked my best friend in kindergarten to have her be friends with me. I literally followed her around the playground, jumping from like the monkey bars to like pretend like she didn't see me, but I would follow her because and she's still my friend to this day. I would follow her because I thought she was so cool. I was like, oh, she talks to boys and I wanted to be like it, but I was so scared to actually like just talk to her and ask her to be my friend that I followed her. Eventually one day she turned around, she's like, you want to play? And I was like, okay. But when the next year, I told my mom, I said, I don't really have a lot of friends and like, I would like to have more friends. And she just, she said, Kim, just go up to 10 people every day and just say hi and say their name. And I started putting that into practice. Like years later, I told her, I said, Mom, that advice you gave me in first grade, like that really started a whole new path for me.
Yeah.
And to being just a bit more comfortable just speaking to people and not having to pee myself.
But honestly, like, that's good advice for anyone. Go up to 10 people and say hi and remember their name.
Yeah. Funny part is she was like, oh my God, that really worked. And I was like, yeah. And I said, yeah. And it's still advice that I put into practice on a daily basis. I've done that to grow my business. I reach out to at least 10 people per day on Instagram DM and just say hi with their name and start a conversation.
That's amazing.
And then invite them into my community. Yeah, it's been a very effective strategy that has served me well, and I think it totally can serve adults well. Because I speak at a lot of anime conventions, to make a long story short, my husband is a voice actor, and
Oh,
so
nice.
we get to go to these amazing, he's best known for his work in Japanese anime, and so we go to these anime conventions, and there are tons of kids there who they see. You know, me and my husband do a personal development panel called How to Heroify Yourself, How to Step into Being the Hero of Your Life, and even as reluctant as sometimes we may be about becoming that hero. But sometimes those like that to become the hero of our life, like normally that's not taught a lot. Like it wasn't taught in schools, and it certainly wasn't taught to me growing up necessarily in those terms. And so we deliver this panel, and I share the fact with these very, very introverted children. Like I say children, but parents are like in their teens and 20s and sometimes older. But I share this with them of like how insecure and how like introverted I am, and I still am introverted. Like I still need my moments of alone time, and I still need to like hang out by myself for an hour or so every day just to be in my own little bubble.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like I show up and I serve because I've come to the other side of it. Like I've come on the other side, and I can share about what just doing a daily act of bravery, and sometimes those acts of courage of bravery, or just say, literally, it's saying hi to someone and saying their name. I still, to this day, have a little bit of nerves about saying hi to a total stranger and saying their name. But
Yes.
I've gotten into the practice and mustered up the courage to just make it a practice to get out of my comfort zone in that way.
So where did that come from?
That tenacity.
Yeah. I mean, it was something that I'm sure you had to put into practice.
Yes, I've been practicing it while I was in first grade, you know, about 25, 6 years ago. So it's been in practice for 26 years. Like
Yeah, but
it
I mean,
was
after first
definitely
grade, I
learned over
mean,
time.
first grade is pretty young, but then you start moving into your teenage years and you have a whole new set of things that are going to, get into your head and behaviors that you're going to undertake. What kind of a teenager were you?
It depends on who you ask. I was a very, very ambitious teenager. I always knew, like when I was in high school, my main goal was to be an actress and work in Hollywood and be a screenwriter. And the deeper underlying reason about that was because I thought that that would allow me to have the impact that I wanted to make. I thought that, oh, if I'm just an actress, if I am on like big TV shows or in big movies, then I'll be able to have an impact, and then my voice matters.
Yeah.
And so that was my goal, was to be an actress and work in Hollywood. And so I was always very tenacious about my career, and I was always very, very supported in my career. The other part of me, so that's why I said it depends on who you ask, was I'm an Enneagram. If you're familiar with the Enneagram personality test, I am an eight, and the eight is the challenger, which makes me very good at being a coach, but not so good at being the daughter of an addict. And so my dad, for 30 years, had been an addict. He was an alcoholic and a drug addict, a very successful one though too, because I watched that. Not in spite of himself and his addiction, he still built over the course of growing up into in like over the course of 30 years, a very, very successful business in Los Angeles. But at the same time, what that did was, I saw the father that he could be, because I like to say that I grew up with four dads. I grew up with the really awesome sober dad who would take me to the park, who would play with me, who was just super supportive. I grew up with, and then I had three other dads. I had the stoner, very laid back dad, like just I could do nothing wrong. It was just laid back. It was, hey, whatever, comme ci, comme ça. And then I had the alcoholic dad, and that was the dad that I really, really strongly disliked, and the pill popping dad. So it depended on, I never knew which dad was coming home.
Yeah.
And so I do believe that that's a part of where my introversion came from, because seeing when you grow up in that sort of household, if any of you have grown up in a house of addiction, like you kind of lean back before you act on behavior.
Yeah, completely.
I found, yeah, you lean back a little bit because you want to assess the behavior, because I don't believe that people are their behaviors. Like you can change your behavior in a hot second. You can just watch a funny cat video or a baby video and suddenly your state, which is your behavior, is comprised of your physiology and your emotional state. And your state can change. Your emotional state can change from being kind of sad to you watch a funny cat video and then suddenly you're chuckling. And so your emotion has changed. But when growing up in an addict household, like I would lean back before I actually interacted, because I wanted to know who I was interacting with. So as I grew up with that, as a teenager, I saw the possibility in my dad. I saw the possibility of the amazing sober dad, that when he was sober, like he was awesome. He was amazing and super talented, super grounded, like really fun to be around. But it wasn't that often. But the thing is that I held him to that high standard. I held him to that standard. And when he would behave less than, my Enneagram 8 side, the challenger, would come out and not be the most supportive of his behavior. And what, you know, when any sort of addiction, we're lying to ourselves in some way. And sometimes people don't like to be called out on their bullshit.
Yeah.
and that was my dad. But I also mirrored that same behavior, not entirely in that aspect, but in order to create some semblance of control in my life, around the age of 12, I developed bulimia. And I battled that for about 10 years, trying to figure out what that was and what that did. What bulimia also did, though, was it totally threw off my biochemistry. And so throughout my teenage years, I struggled with hormones, which, as you know, are very tied to depression and other sort of mental health issues. And I didn't have any tools or resources or knowledge on how to kind of get out of that. And so I was struggling with bulimia for years. And I remember when I was about 16 years old, I finally came out to my parents and shared that I had been throwing up my food for some time. And I remember this one day, my mom, she said, we were having dinner at the dinner table, which was very odd for us as a family, because we very much like would kind of forage the food. My mom's an awful cook, and we would forage food from the refrigerator and then maybe a TV dinner or something, and then just sit around the couch, the TV, and just watch a show. But for some reason, I remember we were sitting at the dinner table, and I went upstairs to do my homework, which wasn't very outrageous. I was a very, very good student. I was very classic type A perfectionist, fake it till you make it. I felt like I was choking on the inside. But I was very, very put together on the outside and looked like I had it all together, when inside I was just screaming. And I remember I went upstairs to go do my homework, but I had a pit stop along the way and I was going to stop off at the bathroom. And I don't know how my mom, with her like laser sharp ears, now being a mother myself, like I'm like, oh, moms know.
Yeah, now
moms
you get
know.
It.
And so she knew. And so we ended up in like a full-on brawl in the hallway, until somehow my mother, my in her 60s, tackled me to the ground and said, I'm not going to let you kill yourself. And that's when I realized that an eating disorder was just a slow form of suicide.
Absolutely.
And that was when I said, it was such a visceral moment that I realized that I had to change, but I didn't know how. And so I started at least with eliminating some of my triggers that were around me. So for one, dance was a huge trigger. Being in front of a mirror, staring at my body in a leotard was not a very conducive environment for healing. And you can't heal in the same space where you got sick. So that was one area that I removed myself from. And eventually, a couple years down the road, I removed myself from my parents' home. And I said, I'm going to move out. And I took my leave of them because at that time, 6 months prior, I had found Pilates. And I had been looking for some form of exercise. I knew I was still struggling with bulimia, but I wanted to find some form of exercise that made me feel good. I wanted something that made me feel good in my body. Dance was ruled out. Going to the gym, I had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
And then my girlfriend, she said, hey, I'm studying to become a certified Pilates instructor. Do you mind if I give you some free lessons? And that was when it clicked. And that was when Pilates was, you know, celebrities were coming out and doing it. And I was very into celebrities because remember, my goal was to be in Hollywood, working in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, well, if I want to be a celebrity, I might as well do what the celebrities are doing. So I started modeling a different behavior and I learned Pilates. And I was like, this, for the first time in my life, I felt so good in my body. It was an unbelievable feeling. And I went to my parents. I said, I need to teach this. And they said, we support you in this. Cause prior to that, my parents, I was so depressed in high school, like as straight A amazing student as I was, I did not understand or comprehend why I needed to learn chemistry and biology if I wanted to work in Hollywood. I was like, these things will not serve me. Why am I suffering in this space? And my mom gave me the freedom. She said, Kim, if you want to leave high school, if you want to drop out, which is not a freedom that many, many parents would give their children.
Right.
If you want to drop out, I know you're going to be successful regardless. So whatever you want to do, but there's no point in being miserable every single day. And I was like, suddenly having that permission, I finished high school. I graduated. I ended up getting into an arts college with two scholarships. And then I found my acting class. And this acting class was the first place that started to change my life. And so I started at 17 years old going to this acting class, and my parents said that they would support me using the funds that they had saved for college for the first 4 years, as if it was for college, in any sort of acting thing. So they paid for my acting classes, they paid for my my singing lessons, they paid for me to go to networking events and get memberships with all of that. And all of that taught me a very solid business mindset to be able to repeat that in every other business that I've had. And so with them giving me that freedom, that allowed me so much ability to just explore who I was and who I wanted to be. And this acting class was the first place where transformation started. And because when I got to my acting class, they said they gave me a list of books, and it was like 50 books, and most of them were about celebrities, or not celebrities, but like old school Hollywood, how to write plays, how to do this. But the first book, and it was highlighted in this big old box, and it said the most important book that you'll ever read, and it was The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I, being the straight A student that I was, I went to the library, I went to the bookstore, and I got all the books, and I opened up the most important book that I would ever read, and I was like, this has nothing to do with Hollywood.
Right.
What does effectiveness and like personal habits have to do with Hollywood? Like, this has nothing to do with it. But I started reading it. I said, okay, well, you know, straight A, I'm, you know, the perfectionist. So I went for it and I read the book, and it was the first time that anybody had given me permission to have control of my behavior. Because in my household, behavior was not something that was controlled. Behavior was a reaction. It was a very, very reactionary, that I learned very, very reactionary tools and resources. And everything was reacting to what was happening to you, but not the belief that life is happening for you. And the circumstances that you're going through now are preparing you for something greater, for this greater purpose that you have inside of you. And all the dreams and all the desires and all the things that you want to create in your world are real, and they can be made, they are for you if you just choose to go after it. But I never learned the power of ownership. I never learned because my dad didn't own his behavior. Like I didn't understand that. And so it was the first time that this new idea had been presented to me that I could, one, control my behavior, which meant there was a way that I could save myself from my eating disorder. And two, that I could take ownership.
Yeah.
Ownership
is so important.
It's so key. And the thing is that I had in the past, that was the first time that I realized I was blaming everyone and their dog, mostly my dad, though, but I was blaming everyone else for my circumstances in life. Yeah. I was blaming my dad for my eating disorder, but it was never my dad who was shoving my finger down my throat. It was me. It was never my dad. I blamed my dad for my crappy relationships with men in the past, and it was never him choosing my boyfriends. It was me. In fact, he really disliked a few of them. but it was, I had to take that ownership of my life and my choices, and that these were my choices to make, and that if I wasn't liking the choices that I was making, I could choose a new path. I could choose a new way. And that concept saved my life.
Completely.
That concept completely transformed who I was into the version of me that I have created now. And so what happened was, by knowing that concept, that when I got presented by my girlfriend with the idea of teaching Pilates, I thought, well, great. I'll start teaching women this thing that has now made me feel so good in my own body that more people need to feel this good in their body. And I started teaching, and I started teaching, and I went totally balls out. I was teaching like 8 to 10 hours a day. But what that got me was into a new environment where I was having new conversations with new people from different backgrounds, from different belief systems. And I was learning from my clients, probably more than they were learning from me, but at the time, but I was learning about how you could be in a relationship, how you could be in a healthy relationship, what a healthy relationship was, what an unhealthy relationship was. I was seeing through my clients' eyes different ways of being. And that was extraordinary for me. That was a massive breakthrough that I saw that, oh, I could choose to, that mixed with the concept that I can choose my own path, I can take ownership and make new choices. Well, if I can make new choices, then I can make a new choice to believe something different. I can make a new choice to believe that I can have a really amazing, thriving marriage where we're not yelling and screaming at each other all the time. Like I can make a new choice to that I can have a body that I really love. I can make a new choice that I can have children. And yeah. Not fuck them up completely.
Right.
Excuse my language.
I mean, but here's the thing. It's like it's not a matter really of whether or not you will fuck up your kids.
Yeah.
It's how.
It's how.
So if you can go through it without giving them too much trauma, you're probably okay.
Yeah, and it's a win-win for all. Like, of
it
course
is.
My son is going to have some limiting beliefs of his own that he's going to have to overcome and work through and move through. At the same time, it's like it's my choice to say, okay, these were he chose me. I know my son chose me for a reason to be his mom. I do believe he chose me for a purpose. And I always say it was my son who was my catalyst for me growing my business, because prior to that, I was again stuck in a cycle of blame and shame. 3 weeks before I was, I walked down the aisle to marry my forever husband. Mm-hmm. I was bought out of my first e-commerce company, and it was not, the summer prior to that, I had dealt with lawyers for the first time, and I was going through this whole like nasty, just a mess. And I got stuck and sucked back into that victim mindset and that mindset of blame, shame, and complaining.
Yeah.
And And also, it really spirals from a level of disbelief. Like that, going through that experience, it caused me to doubt everything. It caused me to doubt my ability to be a business owner. It caused me to doubt my ability to market myself. It caused me to doubt myself as like if I was capable or if I was smart enough and all those limiting beliefs that popped up. So it surfaced all the shit, and it brought it all to light. And I was like, okay. So cool, that happened. Now I look back and I'm like, okay, cool, that happened. I learned so much. I'm so grateful for that experience, but I did not feel that way initially. Yeah. And I didn't feel that way initially for at least a year and a half, almost 2 years. But then I found out I was pregnant. And then I realized the person that I was back in the summer of 2016, while I was happy and I was doing some things, I really was so mired in all these limiting beliefs and all this blame and all this shame and all this complaining that I was like, I do not want to be that version of me for my son, because I had already learned that you can recreate yourself. Like, I don't look back on my having an eating disorder and say I was recovered. I say I was transformed, because I look back on that girl who was so self-destructive, so self-sabotaging, so like, oh my goodness, poor girl. Like, I just want to give her a big giant hug and tell her she is so loved. Like I look back on that version of myself and I don't even recognize myself.
Yeah. Yeah, so as most people don't. I mean, you look back on the older versions of yourself, and I believe it is versions. You know, because we all do go through various phases, and if you're lucky enough, you do come out the other side changed.
Yes. Yes. And that was what, and knowing that was allowed me to say, okay, I can change my mindset. I can, again, going back to the Stephen Covey, I can take ownership of my choices, and my choices have led me to where I am today. Like, I had to stop blaming my business partner, even though, like, he wasn't a bad guy. He's a great guy. We just have very different preferences in how to run a business. And that's what caused our split in our partnership.
Yeah.
But I was so busy blaming him that I couldn't see all the good qualities. I couldn't see the fact that he had blessed me with this amazing opportunity to create a company that was all mine, a company that I love so much, because I created Crown Yourself on my honeymoon. I was just too scared shitless to do anything with it because of all the doubt. But once I got rid of the complaining and the blaming, and I turned those fingers around and I pointed them at me, not blaming myself, but saying, okay, let's take ownership of the choices that got me to where I am now. And now how can I make new choices to get to where I want to be, to get to the version of me that will be comfortable becoming a mom? Because the title of CEO, the title of president, the title of business owner, those didn't bother me. Like, I've had 3 businesses. Those didn't faze me. What did scare the crap out of me was the title of mom, because I wanted to be a damn good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants to be, you know, the person who, you know, the therapist goes, okay, so I had this one guy and his mother.
Yeah. So tell me about your mother.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but like, it is great that you bring up the ownership of all of this, because I think the thing that people don't realize is that you can take ownership over everything, absolutely everything in your life, all of your choices, and that equals freedom. The other side of the coin of freedom is work. Uh-huh. I mean, it takes a lot of effort once you realize that you're going to own all of your shit, is that now you're responsible for it. You know, it's like you can't unknow, you can't unsee. Yes. And so now you have a responsibility to yourself to act on those things.
It's very much like the Matrix.
Yes,
like you can't
completely.
You can't unsee the Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no going back once you've taken the pill.
Yes. 150%.
So then tell me a little bit about how parenting changed you.
How did parenting not change me? My goodness. Parenting changed me because my son is like my little, just my catalyst of compassion. And he taught me not only that I need to have more compassion on myself, because about a year after I gave birth, I saw how I process shame, because our children are very much our mirrors.
Yeah.
And I saw how I process shame, and I was like, whoa, when I saw it reflected into how he was treating himself for a hot second when I told him that he did something wrong, or that he couldn't do something. I saw how he would process that, and I was like, oh my goodness, I did not want him to, is that how, because I know who he got it from, and he got it from me. And I yeah. was like, oh, is that how I process shame? Holy crap, I do not want him to, like, no. So I was able to make a very, very quick shift and shift how I process shame so that he could have a better model. I believe there is nothing that will grow you faster than becoming a parent and becoming an entrepreneur. Both of those are like personal development on steroids. Like, because yeah. every day you have a reflection of you. Your business is a reflection of your relationship with money, of your relationship with business. Your children are a reflection of you in so many ways. And so how do you change that? Well, it's constantly growing, constantly adapting, constantly shifting that identity into that next level version of you. And I love what you said about freedom. And there is a fantastic quote by Sigmund Freud about freedom that I have found to be 100% true. It's that most people do not really want freedom, because freedom involves responsibility, and most people are frightened of responsibility.
Yes.
And it's so true, because ownership, being at cause for your life, is so key to making any sort of change. And at the same time, it is not a common place to be. So often yeah. in our society, we see it's very easy to blame. We can blame the economy, we can blame the president, we can blame the person down the street, we can blame anybody else. Like, our legal system is based on blame for the most part. But when the problem is that with blame, nothing changes.
Right.
You can't change with blame. The only way you can change is by taking personal responsibility and taking ownership of where you are.
Yes.
Now, I have seen with a lot of my high performers, because I work with a lot of high achievers, is that there is, and I have done this personally as well, where there is another side of blame. So once I've learned this glorious side of ownership, once I learned the glorious side of taking personal responsibility, it is easy for high achievers to also swing the pendulum to blaming themselves. That is still blame. That
yes.
is still 100% blame. If you're blaming yourself, if you're on your own back about the stuff that you should or shouldn't or did or didn't, or especially the shoulds that you should have done or that you shouldn't have done, what happened. Now it's to get the pendulum away from blaming yourself. It's like, okay, what happened. The past is the past. Now how do I make a conscious change? Like, how do I make a new choice? How do I choose a new path? How do I choose a new way of behaving? And then act accordingly. Like, just act accordingly to that new way of behaving. And it's going to feel awkward at first. It will. Believe me, when I first started believing in myself, I was like, this belief feels awkward, because it was going against the whole paradigm of being the self-doubter. When I was recovering from bulimia, when I first started like looking at my body and making a conscious choice that I was not going to critique it in the mirror, and that I was like not going to say something nasty, I was like, I am going to say something positive, I am going to say nothing at all. And I would walk past the mirror, and sometimes I would be like, okay, today's a nothing at all day.
Yeah.
And there were other days where I would say, okay, wow, I'm really grateful for my hips, I'm really grateful for my butt, I'm really grateful for these arms that are getting stronger every day. And I changed the way I spoke to myself. When you change anything, it's going to feel awkward at first. And then after you go through the awkward phase, it's going to feel mechanical. It's still going to feel a little rusty. But there comes a point where it starts to become a little natural. Just like going to the gym around New Year's. Like, when you first set your New Year's resolution to get fit and toned, like, going to the gym starts out awkward. It feels awkward. You feel sore. Sometimes you don't know how to use the machines. You're like, well, how did this, I don't understand this elliptical, and like, what is that? What am I doing on this? But after a while, if you just keep the practice, then you can keep going and you keep the practice, and eventually it can become mechanical. And so even though it still feels a little awkward and a little robotic, you're still doing the work and the practice of moving into it. And after it starts feeling mechanical, then it starts to feel a little bit more natural. And it takes time, but it's the difference between having a practice versus having a pill.
Yes.
Pills are a quick fix solution for something, and they can be effective and they can be necessary at times. But what are the practices that can really set your mental health up and your physical health up for success?
Yeah.
What are the practices you can put in place?
Well, the first thing that anyone should do for themselves when they are evaluating their mental health is think about the language that they use on a daily basis about everything in your life. How do you talk about your circumstances? How do you talk about yourself? What are the words that you use? Because you create and manifest your reality based on your language first.
I am so glad you said that, Chris. Like, OMG, language is my jam. Language is my thing.
It's everything.
It really is. And so often, one of the common things that I see as a coach is that we are constantly saying things the way we don't want them. We're very aware of what we don't want, right? We're very aware that we don't want to get fat. We're very aware that we don't want to be in another bad relationship. We're very aware that we don't want to go through another awful breakup again, or whatever it is that you don't want to have. We're very keenly aware of what we don't want.
Right.
The problem is that our unconscious mind, which I like to say that your conscious mind is the goal setter, your unconscious mind is the goal getter. Our unconscious minds are... They do not understand negative. So if I told you, don't think about chocolate, what's the first thing you're thinking about?
Right.
You're
thinking about chocolate. Of course you are.
Yeah. Just like if I said, don't think about your ex-girlfriend, like, what are you thinking about? So instead, focus on what you want, like, and say it the way that you want it. If you don't want someone like your ex-girlfriend and you're like, I'd really love an amazing, talented, passionate woman who is faithful and loyal, then focus on, I want an amazing, passionate, talented woman who is faithful and loyal, rather than on what it is that you don't want.
Right.
Say it the way that you want it, and that's how you start to manifest things in your reality. Because what happens is when you're saying things the way that you don't want it, it basically puts like blinders on, like if you've ever seen a horse on a racetrack and they have those blinders on, and all they can see is straight in front of them. Well, when you're saying things that you don't want and you're focused on exactly what it is that you don't want, all you're seeing is what you don't want. And so you're going to keep seeing more and more and more of what you don't want manifest into your reality. Rather than when you start seeing things the way that you want it, you may sure see some, and you take the blinders off the horse. So you may see some things that you don't want, but you already also see these other things on the peripheral that are things that you do want, that are things that you do want to have, and that you do desire, and that you do dream of. And one of the things that linguistic hacks or tricks that I use is, instead of saying things the way that I want it, I am already grateful for the thing that I have.
Yeah.
So I even project even further. So I, instead of like, so let's say, for example, you're starting a business and you want your first 30 customers. I say it the way that I want it, as if it's already happened. So thank you so much for my first 30 customers. Thank you so much for my first 30 customers. I am so grateful. Universe, God, universe, source, whatever's out there. Thank you. I just practicing that appreciation and that gratitude, because what you appreciate appreciates. And that is when you will start to notice certain things coming into your reality. Maybe somebody over there says, oh yeah, I've really wanted somebody who is, you know, doing the type of business that you do. Maybe it's, let's say, selling soaps or something. I've always been looking for some sort of alternative soap, or like organic soap, or something that's not so toxic. Oh, I have a friend who was talking about the benefits of what coconut oil could do for your body instead of like toxic chemicals. You start to hear these things because it's because you're already saying, you're A, saying it the way that you want it, and B, you're saying it the way that you want it as if it's already happened. Because by gratitude, you're already saying thank you for the thing that you want. And so thus, your unconscious mind goes on this massive chase to find it and attract it into your life. And not to just attract it, but to notice those signals that you may have not noticed had you not been aware of saying it the way that you want it.
Well, and I'm a big fan of turning yourself into a problem solver, because you're going to solve your own problems one way or the other. But the way that people usually solve their problems, myself included for a long, long time, is you give yourself the answer. And a lot of times the answer is the easy one, which is, I can't do that. Because, that's your answer. I don't know how that works. You've already answered it. Instead of asking questions like, how does this work? Where can I start? Where is this information? How do I do it? Once you start asking questions that require you to dig a little deeper, you become your own problem solver.
100%. And one of the biggest questions that I tell my clients to steer away from is the question of why.
Yes.
Because why will give you a lot of reasons. It'll give you a lot of excuses. It'll give you a lot of beliefs, but it won't necessarily give you a strategy or a system to move you forward. So for example, like when you're struggling with any problem, what's the common question that everyone asks? Like, why is this happening to me? Right?
Yeah.
Well, then you're going to get a lot of reasons as to why it's happening to you. Like you may trip and you'd be like, oh, it's because I'm in whatever thing that pops up. But it's why is not really a question that's conducive. I love the questions that you use. And I want to make sure like everyone paid attention to that language. What and how questions will give you strategy. They will give you new tools. They will give you new resources. Who can I ask to support me? Where could I find the resources? Who, what, where, how? Those questions will drive you to finding new answers. And I do believe that your life, the quality of your life is really dictated by the quality of your questions. So if you want a better life, start asking better questions.
Yeah,
one
absolutely.
One of my clients who I was working with today, she was stuck in this very constrictive cycle of asking the question of why. And I just posed the question, and this is one of my favorite questions to ask, of what if you believed that you were here for a purpose? Just try that belief on. Like, what if you believed that shitty scenario that happened to you happened for you? What if you believed that experience was actually setting you up for something better? What if you believed that because you didn't get that thing that you thought that you thought you wanted, that maybe that's actually setting yourself up for something better? How would you behave? How would you be operating? How would you feel if you believed that?
Yeah. Yeah. Those right there are exactly the right kind of things to think about. I like that a lot. The other thing that I like is I like to look at scenarios that you don't feel like you've got a lot of control over. You know, because a lot of times there are things that you don't feel like you've got a lot of control over. Say, you know, losing a job, or someone breaks up with you, or you get in a car accident. Sometimes things happen. Sometimes things just happen. Exactly.
Yeah, life happens.
The question is, who are you going to show up in that situation as? Because you can choose how you're going to respond to those external things. And it takes some practice, but you can make yourself the kind of person who responds one way versus another way.
100%. Yeah, one of my friends, her brother committed suicide, and she remembers the moment that the police showed up at her door to share. And she just knew. She knew.
Yeah.
She just knew. And she also knew that in that moment, she could choose her reaction. She could choose how she responded to the situation. She could choose who she showed up as. She couldn't choose that she could bring her brother back, because she couldn't.
Yeah.
But she could choose.
And that's not her fault. And it's not something she can do anything with other than take care of herself.
Yeah. And so she chose to take ownership. She chose, and not ownership of taking the blame for what he did. She chose to take ownership of her, who she was going to show up as and how she was going to support her parents through the process of losing their child. Like, she chose who she would show up as and how she would use this opportunity to speak around the world to serve other people, to help them enhance their mental health. Like, she took it and had it be, had that horrible, horrible thing be a catalyst for something great and be a catalyst for good, so that even though her brother died, even though her brother took her own, his own life, she still chose that his life would not be in vain, that it would be something that would be for good.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can have your story be told as a warning that helps people. It's sad and it's frustrating to have to go through those moments when, you know, someone commits suicide. There are so many questions. And ultimately, you have to start putting yourself back together, especially when it's someone close. I've experienced it more times in my life than I feel like I should have. You know, you wonder how people attract each other. You know, it all just seems so random. But, you know, here I am today, the person I would have considered to be the most, the least likely to be the one standing at the finish line, with their head mostly on straight. And yet here we are, through the power of change.
Yes.
Because it, honestly, it was pretty touch and go for a while there.
Well, it's not to say that change is not difficult. I mean,
no, change is hard.
I watched my son growing up, and learning how to walk.
Yeah.
And so often as adults, we forget the toddling period. When I was first recovering from my bulimia, there, from the age of 19 to the age of 22 was when I was in my toddling period. And I allowed myself to, I had some form of awareness that I was in my toddling period. So when I would relapse, when I would fall off the wagon, in essence, the bulimia wagon, for in those terms, like when I would relapse, I allowed myself the grace to say, you know what? I'm toddling. And so often as adults, we forget that we toddled as a child. And that's actually how we learn. The thing that you don't see a lot of kids, you may see kids get frustrated, but they don't stay in that frustration.
Right.
And yet so often as adults, we stay in that frustration of, oh, I can't do this, or, oh, I don't know how, or, oh, and we allow those reasons to wrap ourselves up and keep us stuck in our cocoon rather than moving forward and allowing ourselves to toddle and fall down and play and maybe laugh at a fall. So when I saw my son starting to toddle, I was like, okay, cool. And sometimes he would get frustrated and I was like, oh, did you fall on your bottom? And I would make it a joke, and he would see how I would respond, and then he would model his response. So when he fell, after enough falls, he would make it so it wasn't a big deal. He'd actually make it a game. And so he started to play with it. And that's actually how he was able to learn how to walk faster, I believe, because he was able to play with it and it didn't get stuck in this frustration that so often us as adults, we can get stuck in. I mean, we have everything at the push of a button. Like, you can order food and it'll be at your door in 5 seconds. You can order something off of Amazon and you'll have it the next day. But we forget that our learning process is still the same, whether it's learning how to walk or learning a new belief, learning to believe in yourself, learning how to eliminate self-doubt, learning how to deal with fear. Whatever it is, there is a learning period, and it's okay that you have that toddling period. It's supposed to be there.
I think that goes back to use of language yet again, though, in a certain way. It's the same area of the brain, because, I mean, if you think about it, when we're toddlers, It's all moment to moment, experience to experience. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to build yourself into this permanent structure. And when you start moving into your teen years and your adult years, there is this conditioning that takes place where it's almost like you're trying to figure out what the foundation is and you're trying to nail things down permanently. This is who I'm going to be. This is the kind of person I am. This is my personality. This is what I wear. This is what I like. You know, you're asserting these things. You're building your own house of beliefs and wants and desires and personality. And you start constructing these things to be permanent without realizing if you don't like something, you can tear it down and start over.
Yeah. And I think that it's the perception of permanence. It's you said something brilliant of the belief of this is who I am. And that is like one of my least favorite excuses on the planet.
Yes.
Oh, this is just who I am. I'm like, well, if who you are is kind of an asshole,
yes,
then how about we change that?
Like, yeah,
this is just who I am. I'm like, then it's about being like you look at a toddler, you look at kids, they're coachable, they're teachable. But when did we decide, whether as a society or as adults, like when did we decide that we were no longer, that this is who I am, this is how it's going to stay?
Right.
Like there is nothing in this world that is permanent.
Yeah.
Like the only thing permanent really is change. I mean, just look at nature. It's cyclical. It changes. It evolves. It grows. Parts of it have to die in order for something new to come from it.
Yeah.
Like that's,
if you don't feel like you are wrong about something at least once a year,
yes,
you have got some serious problems.
Yes. And it's so like, and that's the thing is that if you look at so often, our egos are caught up with this desire to be right. And that is where the this is who I am belief really stems from. It's this egoic belief that this is who I am. And the problem with any sort of change is that suddenly it goes against the ego's identity of this is who I am. Where if you need to change in order to shift your beliefs, shift your circumstances, shift anything, it's about it's about the practice, again, of training that muscle so that your muscles get used to change being the permanent thing, to where growth and evolution and expansion is the norm rather than this is who I am, staying stuck in that old identity.
Yeah.
When if it's not fitting, like, shift it, change it, reinvent yourself. I mean, you see celebrities like Madonna and Lady Gaga do it all the time. But what makes us think that as humans and as adults, we don't need to reinvent ourselves or maybe try on a new belief or maybe try something new? Like I had to realize recently that I had to reinvent the athlete in me. I have never thought of myself as an athlete in 1,001 years, except for when I was teaching Pilates back in 2011, and I just had this notion, this crazy outlandish notion to try to run a marathon. And I literally, I can tell you this, when I was 18 years old, I could not run a mile to save my life. I would have died. Like, I was an exercise-induced asthmatic. I tried running down the block one time, and I went with my Walkman, which kept skipping because it was a CD before the iPod came out back in 2005. And I could not run. Like, cardio was not my jam. And yet, cardio now is my jam. Like, it is the thing that I love, and
yes,
that I literally, it makes me a better human on a day-to-day basis when I do my cardio regularly, four if not five if not six or seven times a week. Like, it doing 30 minutes of cardio is really something that grounds me, that allows me to release all the hormones, all the stuff that needs to be released, all the stress. But had I stayed in that old identity of 17-year-old me, like, if I run, I will die.
That, well, like, I mean, you that, weren't getting any calories, you know, so you're probably exhausted.
Well, and that, and bulimia is a whole bunch of radical things to your body that are, I also say bulimia is the worst eating disorder because it just doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't work. It actually makes your face fat because you store bile in your jawline. It's really sexy. So your face actually gets fatter. Yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Try loving yourself. Try being kind to yourself. Try being compassionate with yourself. That works a lot better. And what I found was I started this new identity, this, okay, what if I was someone that actually liked cardio? Like, what if I was?
Yeah.
So again, playing with that what if question. And I started playing with that what if question, and I started to find myself feeling better because I was doing regular cardio. And then because I was feeling better doing regular cardio, I thought, well, maybe I could challenge myself to run a marathon. And so then I challenged myself to run a marathon. And from there, it just knocked it out of the park. Like, I ran it and had my whole family in dismay because I had never been an athlete before. Now, so often we can sometimes get, even if it's a positive quality, a positive identity, we can get stuck in an old identity of who we were. And so after giving birth, I thought, well, I'm a marathon runner. Like, I can run a marathon. So I ran a marathon like a year after giving birth, and I had not trained properly. I was still in the mindset of the logically of like, oh yeah, I work out like regularly. But when I looked at it on a measurement standpoint on like how often I was exercising and how hard I was training, it was not up to athlete standards.
Yeah.
And so I decided, I said, I'm going to run an actual marathon. And this time I'm actually going to run it instead of ending up having to walk majority of it because I was so exhausted and not prepared. And I decided to adopt that athlete mentality and that identity of being that athlete. And so that is a change and a shift and a choice, but it goes back to that choice of ownership, of owning your choices.
Yeah. I love everything about that. You know, when I decided that I was going to be a person, that liked running, I liked the idea of running. And now I'm a person who likes having run. I never want to do it when I get the shoes on. I don't feel graceful. I don't feel fast. But there's something kind of wonderful about the fact that your brain doesn't actually know any of that. So you can stumble through it. You can huff and puff, and you can get yourself all the way through it. And your brain will still reward you with a runner's high, whether you beat your best time or not.
Amen. And aren't those runner's highs amazing? It's just like, and it's just such a feeling of accomplishment and of joy and and that's one of the things of like, when I realize that having a, especially for moms or for parents in general, but especially for parents, having a solid morning routine is essential for growth, but for anybody, because those morning hours, those precious morning hours determine, are you going to start off your day owning your day on your time, on your schedule, doing your things that make you feel better about yourself, whether it's exercise, meditation, sitting down and journaling, reading a positive book or a self-help book or a positive psychology book, or doing some, or nourishing your body by just enjoying a meal that's not on the go. If you can do something just in those first morning, that first morning hour to set yourself up, you are training your brain to not be reactionary and instead to take action and ownership for who you are and how you show up in the world.
Yeah. Deliberate intention toward yourself.
Yes.
That's really key. It really matters. And it matters all the time. But first thing in the morning, it really sets a tone. I've been trying to do a daily meditation. There's a meditation that I follow. I joined this group, and it's an online meditation led by someone fantastic. And I just do it, and it's it was one of those things that was really hard for me at first. Because, you know, my brain is always moving, constantly going. I can't shut it off. I can't shut it up. And meditation was really hard for me in that way. But then I realized, you know, let the thoughts come in and let them drift back out and start over. And just, you know, don't worry about being so perfect at it or so good at it. Don't beat yourself up. Just be present. And it's made a big difference.
100%. Yeah. I started transcendental meditation back this summer because we were dealing with some family things that in relation to suicide. And it really helped me just get a whole new level of emotional resiliency and presence to my day. And with that being said, I do have to run in about 5 minutes for a coaching call. So I do want to let you know that. Speaking of presence, I have enjoyed speaking with you so much.
Yeah, this has been, this has really been, we've just been going and going and going. The hour just flew right by.
I know.
Well, we're going to have to definitely do this again. There's a lot to pick your brain about, but I can't thank you enough for giving me the time that you have. And thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you and what you're doing with this podcast and just making the conscious choice to choose coffee. Like that is just a t-shirt in itself, like choose coffee just because
yes.
But just making the conscious choice that, you know, you can choose your own reality. You can choose to start each day afresh and anew and with a warm steaming cup of coffee. And have those moments to yourself and start the day on your own terms.
Yeah. Whatever your coffee happens to be.
Whatever your coffee happens to be. Mine actually happens to be coffee and a workout and a meditation. but setting the day to own the day and choose the coffee and choose to create a new path. And so I so admire you and what you're doing. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. How lucky are we that we get to hear these conversations with these really amazing people? I'm flabbergasted that people are so willing to share their powerful stories with us, and I'm so glad that they do. If you want to get some more Kimberly Spencer in your life, and I know you do, you can do that at our website, which is crownyourself.com. There's links to her podcast, her books, and all kinds of other things. As for me, I have some stuff coming up musically. I also have some stand-up comedy things coming up that I can't talk about yet. But I really just want to say I appreciate all of the private messages. I appreciate all the support. And I love each and every one of you. So don't kill yourselves out there.